Great choice of song.
I remember getting this album as a kid as well, Bat Out of Hell, 1977. Today or I feel old. Hello, Dan Murphy. I feel old most days these days. How are you doing today, Murph?
I'm doing good. Jeff, how are you?
Good. I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Elliot to open up that segment. Were you a Meatloaf guy?
I didn't mind his music. I was just slightly ahead of my time, right? I mean, I was born in 70, so, you know, I do remember some of the songs, but I'd say as a whole, I didn't buy any albums, but if the songs came on, I didn't mind them.
So you never, so there was a never overly refreshed Dan Murphy belting out Paradise by the Dashboard Light at the karaoke bar on a Tuesday night. This scene never happened in your life?
That scene never happened. But, you know, you do remember that song being blasted in university and stuff like that, and people singing along. So it was one of those kind of songs.
Great sing-along. Murph, first of all, thanks so much for stopping by today. How you been, pal? You good?
I'm good. I'm out of COVID protocol as of yesterday,
nice.
So that's good.
Excellent.
Kyle Bukauskas had to fill in for five games there for me, which was nice, but I'm super happy back to work and set for, what, first home game in 5 weeks for the Vancouver Canucks tonight? It's been a while.
Yeah, and it's a biggie, both on the ice and off the ice as well. The 10th annual Hockey Talks game as well, before the team faces off against the Florida Panthers tonight at Rogers Arena. Listen, you know about this and been involved in this for a long time as well. Walk us through what Hockey Talks A is all about for those that may not know, and what tonight's going to be like.
Well, I mean, it was inspired by the passing of Rick Rippon back in 2011. I think it was really spearheaded by TC Carling, who was the director of communications at the time. And it was to bring awareness to mental health issues and kind of try to remove the stigma surrounding speaking about mental health and treating it like any other illness. So that's kind of what it was born from. There was a website in the beginning as well, some resources for people, and it was really just to carry on with Rick's legacy. Who, of course, battled the mental health problems, but did open up about them in the end because he wanted to help others who might be in the same situation. So now, really, it's they were the first team to do it. I think all seven Canadian teams do it now. I'm not sure what percentage of the league does, but it's getting up there. NBX is such a great spokesman for it. You know, he was really close with Rick. I know he'll be here tonight. He'll join me in the first intermission tonight. And it's something I think that he's really taken pride in continuing to do is just talking about Rick, the person he was, and really just letting people know it's never something to be ashamed of to talk about mental health issues. I think a lot more people have them than people realize.
Yeah, and you know, one of the good things, I do get the feeling that, you know, quite unlike when Rick was still with us, people do seem more so than ever comfortable talking about it. I know plenty still suffer in silence, and there's a stigma and a shame that comes along with it where there shouldn't be. But like, honestly, Murph, I think nights like this and having people like Kevin and yourself, very publicly discuss it, I think it helps. I really do. And you might just seem like, oh, it's a drop in the bucket, but that all adds up. And I think we're in a much better place now. Still a lot of work to do, but in a much better place now than we were 10 years ago.
No question. And you see more athletes talking about it now. Jonathan Drouin recently, Tyler Motte's done it, Kevin Love. I mean, the list goes on and on now about athletes that use their platform to speak about it. And 10 years ago, you didn't really see that.
Great point. The game tonight, Florida Panthers are in town. We just saw what the Florida Panthers did to the Edmonton Oilers last night. And, you know, you mentioned coming out of COVID protocol yourself, going in Thatcher Demko and JT Miller. What do we expect the Vancouver Canucks to look like tonight? And do we know who's in net tonight for Gabby's team?
Well, he said he was going to defer to Ian Clark, but we're guessing it's going to be Spencer Martin. And if you're into numbers, he made his NHL debut 5 years ago to the day for the Colorado Avalanche. Now, he's only played three games in the league. Those were 5 years ago. But he has been on the taxi squad here for a while, so he's used to the NHL pace and shot. But, yes, I mean, it's not ideal. I mean, They left behind on that road trip their captain, Horvat, their second leading scorer amongst forwards, Garland, and their backup goaltender in Halak. They come back, they lose their top scoring forward, and their all-star goaltender. So any way you look at it, they're going to be in tough. The fact that it's the Florida Panthers makes it even worse. So, yeah, it's going to be a very difficult next couple games, at least for this team, because we're still not sure when we will see Horvat or Garland, for that matter, and we know that we won't be seeing Miller or Demko for at least 5 days.
Although on a bright note, Elias Pettersson is finding the back of the net.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, that's people have been waiting for this, and you don't want to overstate it. I mean, it came at the end of the road trip, a couple goals against the Capitals, another one against the Nashville Predators. It seems like his confidence is starting to grow, and let's be honest, I mean, this team is not going to make a push for anything if he is not going to be close to his best. He is supposed to be their franchise center, their number one center. He's been moved to the wing. He hasn't even played in the middle, although you'd expect him to be tonight, considering there's no Horvat or Miller. So, I mean, that's a great sign. Like, I think I remember us speaking when things were quite dark in Vancouver before Boudreau was hired, and I think you said to me, what does salvaging the season look like? Because I think we all agreed that the playoffs were such a long shot that that wasn't really in the discussion, and it's still a long shot. I mean, let's be honest. But we said, I think, that you know, salvaging the season would be finishing it with guys like Pettersson and Besser and Horvat, but especially Pettersson, feeling good about their game, feeling confident and feeling solid going into the offseason that they were going to come back and play well next season. And so it looks like at least we're on the way now for Pettersson to be doing that.
Any idea, because I'm always curious how Bruce Boudreau gets to certain players, specifically offensively minded players. Now, for those listening that may not know Bruce's background as a player himself, I mean, this guy was a scorer. This guy put up, you know, ridiculous numbers in junior hockey and in minor pro. Had a brief career in the NHL, as we know. But, you know, growing up, he was, you know, an elite scorer, and he's always had an affinity towards players that he sees a little bit of himself in. Any idea how he's been able to now start to get through to Elias Pettersson? I mean, in his various stops, he always says, oh, I just let them go and you know, go be yourself, Alex. Go be yourself, Getsy. You know, go be yourself. That's kind of what he's done in different situations. How's he gotten through to Elias Pettersson here?
Well, I mean, I think that is part of it. I mean, I don't overthink things is one of his things. Let your creative nature and your talent take over. But it's funny. You know, I think a big part of what he's done since he's been here is he's empowered his top players. And you say, so how has he gotten Pettersson to improve offensively? Well, really, when he first came in, he said, you know what, Elias, we're going to let you kill some penalties. You've never done it here, but let's get you in here. Let's build some confidence. Let's put you in situations you're not used to, but where I'm going to say, hey, show me you can't do this. I'm going to believe that you can until you show me you can't. Now, he hasn't been killing penalties a lot, but I think that was just, I'm going to show confidence in you. I believe you can do these things. So it's funny, but just doing that, empowering some of these players is a way that he's gotten through to them. I also believe that there's a little bit more of an aggressive style to his systems, which, you know, will create more offense for this team. And so maybe that plays into some of the strengths that Pettersson had as well. But I just think it's more about trying to get some confidence back in the players. And you saw that with Besser right off the bat. I think you saw it a little bit with Horvat as well. Miller is kind of the only guy that's been going from the get-go. So I believe that's a big part of it.
You know, and it seemed as if as well, you're a lot closer to it than I am, that Bruce Boudreau, maybe really just the entire organization, recently has gone out of their way to protect Pettersson. You know, you mentioned the move to the wing, and we expect him back in the middle. I think you're right, back in the middle tonight against the Panthers. You know, but the move to the middle, you know, the conversation is not, oh, he's struggling in the move to the wing, rather. The conversation is that, yeah, we're moving him to the wing because he's struggling at center. You know, Bruce Boudreau quick to get out there the message that, oh, he wants to try this. Oh, this is something. Oh, yeah, no, this is all positive and sunshine and lollipops, etc. I know one of Bruce's main traits is, you know, taking bullets to protect his players. It looks like he's really going out of his way here to make sure that he protects Pettersson from any kind of criticism.
Well, and I think that's probably a good plan. I mean, Pettersson is still a very young guy. You know, aside from the slow start last season, this is really the first spot of trouble he's been in. He just signed the big contract in the offseason. You know, and he'd never really struggled to this extent in his NHL career. So, you know, the kid wants to play well. That's the other thing. Like, he's a super hard worker. He definitely overthinks things when it's going like this. He wants so badly to produce and to help the team win that he's probably just in his own head. So you want to shield him from any criticism because this can be a tough market, right? You know, he's going to get asked the questions about his confidence over and over and over until it comes back. And so, you know, if you can take, you know, just one thing away from him having to deal with it, that's going to help in the process.
I'm curious from a fan base point of view, because we know the interviews are going on right now, Patrick Alvine and Scott Mellenbees for the general manager position. Interviews conducted by Jim Rutherford. Is there a consensus favorite amongst Vancouver Canucks fans? Is there one that they want over the other, or is everyone sort of content to see what decision Rutherford makes here?
Well, I mean, it's you know, as you know, Jeff, there's the fan base, but then there's the fan base in which we kind of live day to day, which is Twitter and online, right? And those could be two very different things. And so I'll speak to maybe what, you know, we read about and look online all the time. I think the one thing that this you know, online fan base really wants is they want to make sure there's at least a progressive voice in the room. And, you know, I think they were very happy yesterday that Rachel Doyle was added to the analytics team. And I think they're very happy to hear, you know, Rutherford say that they're going to build up that analytics team. So I think that that's a very important thing. So as long as there's representation and voices, you know, from a scouting background, one person, and I think we see if that's going to be Alvine, if he's the GM, if there's an analytics or someone that can really handle the salary cap and the day-to-day running of that, because that's a job into itself. I just think that everyone wants to see equal representation. And you can understand why. I mean, Benning and Weisbrod kept things pretty close to the vest. It was like, it seemed like a two-man team. I know that there was Chris Gear as well and Jonathan Wall, but it seemed like those two guys ran things and that was that. And I think that the fact that the ownership is going to spend to have a bigger front office, I think is music to the ears of the entire fan base, but especially the one that you know, I'm involved in most of the time.
Okay, so walk us through then what this successful candidate will be walking into. You know, you're in the interview with Jim Rutherford, and the candidate will present his vision or her vision for how they see this team and who this team is. And, you know, there'll also be a discussion about, you know, what's in the cupboard here? You know, what's under the hood? You know, what is this next candidate walking into? Essentially, who are the Vancouver Canucks and what is the organization right now?
Well, and I think that that's still being determined. I mean, at Rutherford's opening presser, he specifically talked about this road trip that just happened and then coming back home to play the Panthers and take on the Blues. And I think they're still trying to figure out where they are in the kind of like the competitive curve of this team. I mean, there's so many big questions that have to be answered. And I think that whoever the GM is, along with Jim Rutherford, has to decide, like, are we 1 year away from being a competitive window, or are we three? Like, do we move JT Miller? Do we think about moving Bo Horvat? Do we, you know, these are the questions. Do we move Brock Besser? Do we sign him, who's up for, you know, a big qualifying offer? There's, I mean, it's so tough to say what their thinking is, but you know that they're, at least they're not tied to any one specific player because they're not their draft picks. They haven't traded for any of these guys. So that's, I don't know what they're walking into because I don't know what Rutherford thinks about this team. And there are just so many huge decisions that have to be made that are really going to determine the short-term and long-term future of this club. And if Rutherford still thinks they're a little ways away, and I think that could be reasonable to think that, then, man, there could be fireworks. Maybe not in season, perhaps a couple names, you know, at the deadline. But with guys like Horvat and Miller having another year left, I mean, I still think there could be fireworks with this organization in the offseason.
Fascinating. Listen, very special night tonight at Rogers Arena. Florida Panthers on the ice. Hockey Talks is the frame around which this game will be played. A really important initiative. It's going to be a great night. I'll be tuned in. I encourage everybody to tune in as well. Murph, as always, thanks, pal. Have a good time tonight. Welcome back, by the way. Welcome back.
It's great to be back, and thanks for having me on, Jeff. Take care.
There is the great Dan Murphy joining us from Vancouver. Tonight's the Florida Panthers, and we all saw what Panthers did last night to the Edmonton Oilers. And this is a team, you know, as Murph just, you know, went through right now, that is without a lot of their regulars, whether it is, you know, most recently, JT Miller, COVID protocol, Thatcher Demko, COVID protocol, Connor Garland, Bo Horvat, Yaroslav Halak. Like, this is a team that is going to be without a lot of their familiar faces this evening up against the Florida Panthers. And again, Hockey Talks night at Rogers Arena. That is one of a number of games on the go around the NHL this evening. Always an intriguing night. The Rangers are facing off against the Carolina Hurricanes. That's a really good one. Always fun watching the Pittsburgh Penguins. They'll face off against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are coming off a 2-1 win yesterday against the Philadelphia Flyers. You can watch that one at 7 o'clock Eastern on Sportsnet. Stars and the Red Wings. How about Dallas last night? Sweating one out against the Buffalo Sabres. Now, be honest. Be honest. There was a time in the game last night we thought Buffalo was going to beat them, right? Like, you thought that Buffalo was beating the Dallas Stars, because that's the way it's gone for Dallas last night. The Arizona Coyotes take on the New York Islanders, the Minnesota Wild, the always entertaining Minnesota Wild, with Kirill the Thrill Kaprizov facing off against the Chicago Blackhawks. Mentioned the Florida Panthers facing off against the Vancouver Canucks. Watch that one on Sportsnet Pacific. The Tampa Bay Lightning taking on the Anaheim Ducks. That should be a good game as well. We've got that one late, 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 Pacific, on Sportsnet East, Ontario, and West. And then to finish off the night, the St. Louis Blues taking on the, hey, look, they've won a couple of games, Seattle Kraken. So that's your schedule this afternoon. News around the NHL. We're waiting to find out the status of Brad Marchand. We know he will not play tomorrow against the Winnipeg Jets. That game gets us an afternoon game. Boston, right? Boston afternoon games, 3 o'clock Eastern. Marchand will not be in the game. Neither will Anton Bleed, who was caught yesterday by Tom Wilson. Really clean, but really hard hits. We're all sort of waiting as well to see what happens with the Edmonton Oilers situation. And does Ken Holland pull the trigger and bring in a goaltender? Because by the end of last night, regardless of how you feel about the Oilers, like, maybe you're a Calgary Flames fan listening right now and you're like, I'm really enjoying this, thank you very much. Please tell me there's a part of you that feels really bad for Koskinen. Because by the end of that game yesterday, it was tough not to feel sorry for the giant goaltender. We're back with Frank Saravelli to talk trades around the NHL. You'll hear from Ryan Getzlaff as well, part of our 32 Thoughts podcast that just came out today. Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network. Welcome back to the program. Welcome to Hour 2. Coming up at the bottom, John Bartlett from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. We'll get on the Habs-Abs page. Habs almost did it last night, hey? Almost beat Vegas? There was a moment, be honest. There was a moment you thought, hey, Habs might have this. Much like there was a moment yesterday, be honest, you thought, hey, Buffalo's got this. And there was a moment where you also said, Colorado's not really playing that great, but they're going to win anyway because of the Colorado Avalanche. Also, we'll play some of our interview from the 32 Thoughts podcast with Ryan Getzlaff, captain of the Anaheim Ducks. In the meantime, always good to welcome aboard Frank Saravelli, our pal from Daily Faceoff, insider with Daily Faceoff and president of hockey content. Frank, how are you today?
Jeff, I'm doing all right. Tested positive for COVID earlier in the week, so not exactly a fun week, but I think, yeah, I'm on the other side now.
Well, that's good. See, I had a weird one with COVID because, you know, people in my family got it, and I had all the symptoms of it, But I kept testing negative. Like, I would test twice a day. My wife would say, like, okay, so I get the sweats and the shakes and the coughing and the lose the voice and the headaches. And I would test. Now, mind you, it was an antigen test. It wasn't a PCR test. And negative, negative, negative. But I swear that I had. So I had, like, the weirdest COVID experience. But nonetheless, that's my drama. But good to hear, Frank, that you're through to the other side of things. The Oilers, on the other hand, not through to any other side. They're still stuck in the mud and unable to get the car out of the garage and, you know, grab whatever cliche you have for the Edmonton Oilers and the situation. It applies, and it hit a new low yesterday against the Panthers. You wonder if that happens again against the Calgary Flames on Saturday, what happens. But I don't know about you, but are you getting the feeling that we should expect something out of the Oilers today? Because I have a hard time believing they're going to go into this game Saturday, Hockey Night in Canada, and put Koskinen through this one more time. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised by anything, but I think the situation and how it plays out from here, it really feels like Ken Holland at least owes it to Dave Tippett to shore up the goaltending situation before making that change, doesn't it? And I know he's resisted that change to this point. It doesn't, you know, nothing would surprise me, as I said, but to have it get to this point, you know, a sixth spot again last night and just an incredible turn of events from how the Oilers played in the first period. Yeah. To that, and sort of seeing Sergei Bobrovsky at the other end withstand the storm, allow his team a shot getting through that first period, that's what good goaltenders do. That's what good teams do. So it was kind of a lesson in exactly what the Oilers are missing, and they've kicked tires, you know, at least for the last week or 10 days on the goaltenders that are out there on the market. And to this point, either I believe the cost has been too high, or I think more to the point, they've really haven't found the person that they believe is going to be the big difference maker and are just trying to hold the fort down until Mike Smith can get back in.
Yeah, you know, Elliot and I at the beginning of the show, we're wondering about, and we'll get to the Philadelphia Flyers here in a second, but we're wondering about Martin Jones. If that could be a Band-Aid solution from, like, we know that, I know Ken Holland doesn't want to do a couple of things, doesn't want to make a coaching change, and, you know, doesn't want to spend massively for a strict rental. If there's a goaltender with term, okay, Ken will warm to moving a first-round pick as part of a package. We wondered about Martin Jones, as we've wondered about Vitek Vanacek. We've wondered about Semyon Varlamov. I know the Oilers aren't too thrilled about Jonas Korpisalo, but he is better than what they have right now. Like, I wonder what the mentality is. Like, are we looking to get a good goaltender or someone that can just try to kind of keep us in the game longer than the guy that we have now? I'm not sure. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't believe in the temporary stopgap. Let's just get a warm body in here and see if the results are any different by rolling the dice. I'm not sure that that's a fix for the Oilers. I'm not sure that it makes sense to give up assets to do that. You know, even though the acquisition cost on someone like Martin Jones would be not too expensive. But, you know, I think you need to look for an eye towards, you know, a little bit of the future as well. Like, this isn't a problem that's going to be going away overnight for the Edmonton Oilers. That's why I look more towards a guy like an Alexander Georgiev from New York, who actually starts again tonight on the first end of their back-to-back for the Rangers. And he's played quite well and has a strong track record, you know, going back the last number of seasons as to being a guy that's ready to take the next step. Now, I reported this back in the summer that he had sort of made it clear to Rangers management, hey, I'm ready for an opportunity. I'm ready to get number one minutes. He sees how good Igor Shesterkin is. He knows what the situation is there, especially with Shesterkin under that contract that's going to fit so nicely for the New York Rangers and their cap situation, given that he's already one of the top goaltenders in the league. And he's saying, I want the opportunity to play more. And I think he's earned it. The question is, are the Rangers going to oblige? What does the cost look like? Because That to me is really what the Oilers need, is someone like a Georgiev who's young, that fits in with the rest of your core, that you can, you know, have solve that question or answer that question for your team for the next number of years. Because, you know, yes, Smith is on this 2-year deal. Everyone knows where that's heading at some point. Father Time remains undefeated. Is Stuart Skinner the guy that you're going to turn the cage over to next season or two seasons after that? It doesn't feel like he's trending exactly towards that opportunity just yet. So they need something more significant than a warm body just to fill the crease at the moment.
See, I'm with you, though, on the point from the Rangers' point of view, which is we've got a good thing going here. We know the Rangers are going to look for a forward come trade deadline, maybe even sooner. But they really like their goaltending situation. Like, I understand how Georgiev wants more of an opportunity and wants to play, but if I'm the Rangers, if I'm Chris Drury, I like things the way they are, even if that means, you know, going through all of this, this situation with both these goaltenders, and then come the off season, sorting it out then, you know, even if, you know, I know Georgiev has arbitration rights, but you make your deal at the end of the season with Georgiev. I mean, this is kind of found money for the Rangers this season, isn't it? Like, they're probably one forward away, Frank, from, you know, starting to say, hey, you know what? They are going to stay one of the big dogs in the Metropolitan here.
It's actually really scary if you're one of the other teams in the Metro with what the Rangers have built up with the talent that I think still has yet to really reach its peak with some of the younger guys like Kako and Lafreniere. Yeah. The cap space that they have, the dead cap money that comes off the books in 2 years. You know, how solid they are in net. Like, but I think more to that point, like, that's to me why if you're going to rip the Band-Aid off and trade Georgiev in the offseason anyway, all you're really asking yourself is, can we get by for the next 40 games with Igor Shesterkin playing 27 of them and someone else, Keith Kincaid or another backup that you can get playing 13 of them? I mean, that's really the question you're asking yourself. So, is it a stretch? I don't think so. I think the asset return would be nice that you could then potentially even use to flip to get, you know, the forward that you're looking for. It's just a thought that I've had, that I've floated out there, that, you know, the pieces seem to line up. And it's more just an illustration point, too, for what I was mentioning about the Oilers. That's the type of goaltender that they need, that's established, has some track record in the league, that is young and continue to grow with your group.
2.425 is the AAV on Alexander Georgiev right now. Speaking of the Rangers, given their situation, I'm going to have to assume they're going to be one of the first-year teams come trade deadline time. It feels, when you watch the team and look at the lineup and look at the construction, like they need one forward and one defenseman. We know that Drury might want that. Does he get that? Like, how frisky is this team come trade deadline?
I love the word frisky, and I would say pretty frisky. as Paul Bissonnette would say, horned up, is another way to put it. I would say the Rangers they may be looking for more than one forward too. I think, you know, it's no secret that they're interested in a reunion with JT Miller, and how good would he look on their cap for next year with one more year on his deal. Plus, if they really wanted to, they could even find a way to re-sign him to an extension if that were the case. That could really make that group pretty dangerous. But I think in terms of looking at some depth-type players, I think there has been some interest from the New York Rangers in someone like a Ryan Carpenter from the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. I think there's been, you know what, and I mentioned this today on our podcast as well, Arturi Lehkonen is a guy in Montreal. Yeah. Everyone's been focused on Ben Chiarot and some others. Arturi Lehkonen, it might be the most in-demand Montreal Canadian at the moment. The number of teams that are lined up to try and get him, they think he's someone that plays and does almost everything in his game exceptionally well, except Finnish, which is ironic because he is Finnish. And in this case, I think the Rangers are also on that list of teams that would be interested in an Arturi Lehkonen.
You know, and I'm with you. Like, I think the Rangers end up doing something here. It does feel as if the odd man out in all of it might end up being Filip Hedl. If you're gonna give, if you're gonna get, you gotta give. It feels to me like, of all the forwards they may have to move, does it feel to you as it feels to me, Frank, like he might be the guy?
He could be. I mean, I could also see, you know, one of the other younger players, probably not Lafreniere, but like this, you know, could they part with Kaapo Kakko? I don't know. Like, I think that would be further down on their list of ideas to consider, but depending on the player and the impact, I think you also have to look at, you know, long-term, you know, in terms of taking a position away, potentially, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of room is left for a player like that to continue to grow and grab a spot?
I think if they're, and, you know, I've heard their name attached to the Arizona Coyotes for Jacob Chychrun, if they're going to go fishing in that pond, then I think definitely a name like Kaapo Kakko would have to be involved. Like, there's a, I mean, you know the laundry list, Frank. There's a laundry list of teams that are lining up here for Jacob Chychrun. Like, Arizona Coyote is going to set themselves up nice with a real nice prospect, a good young player, and a first, and maybe even more, depending on who ends up biting here for Chychrun. What do you think of that situation?
What are they going to have left in Arizona?
Not a whole. They'll have Clayton Keller, sir. They'll have Clayton Keller.
They have 11 unrestricted free agents. Make it 12 with Scott Wedgwood in net, and 5 restricted free agents.
Like, correct.
There's nothing left. I totally understand the intrigue from all these teams in terms of, you know, wanting to pry Jacob Chychrun loose out of there. I'm still not understanding it from Arizona's perspective.
I think they're taking this right down to the skeleton. I think they're trying to get this thing as close to the skeleton as possible. And this is essentially going to be, how do we phrase it? An expansion rebuild is what it might feel like, with a little bit of a head start. Like, you're going to be starting from as close to zero as any team has in their rebuild.
So you know the draft way better than I do. Like, when you're looking at this draft,
next year's the one.
That's kind of my point. Isn't this the wrong year to have all these picks? Not that there ever is a wrong year, but it, you know, to look at it this way and say, well, it's maybe not quite as certain as you get to the top in terms of the total overall crop too.
I think what the, and again, it's still a gamble, because for every team that did this, that bottomed out and got star players, there's also, you know, teams like Columbus or Minnesota that started from there as well and were never able to get any traction. So there's a danger in it. I think that the Arizona Coyotes, Frank, in a lot of ways are of the mind, let's get as many lottery tickets as we can. Let's get as many, and that's why, you know, you look at, you know, what do they have? They have, you know, a couple of conditions, but they got 3 firsts. They've got 4 picks in, oh, 5 picks rather, in the second round, and then whatever else they're going to get from teams that are bidding for Jacob Chychrun or Lawson Krause. To me, they're in the lottery ticket business right now.
And it's an interesting place to be, but, you know, if you're looking at it from a lottery perspective, you've got 8 picks in 2 rounds. Like, the math would suggest that like 3 of those picks at least are not going to pan out. Mm-hmm. And you better hope that the 3 that you have in the first round, you know, that those are the ones that you're making count. Like, it's daunting and really difficult. I commend it, because I think there's nothing worse than being in no man's land in the NHL, not competitive enough for a playoff spot, but not really good enough to not bad enough to be in the lottery. So I get why they're doing it. It's just, it's going to take 5 years for those picks to get to where they want to get to.
Correct.
And that's if you've hit on them. So what, you need something in the meantime.
Sam Kinison always had, the late great comedian Sam Kinison used to always have the line, if you're going to miss heaven, don't miss it by 2 inches. Like the Arizona Coyotes are determined.
I don't think I'm going to have that problem, but yeah.
They're determined not to miss heaven here by 2 inches. See, to me, one of the sidebar things, I'm glad we got in this on Arizona. I want thoughts on this one, Frank. To me, what's intriguing here is, I mean, Chychrun's out there. We'll see what they do with someone like Lawson Crouse. To me, one of the interesting things is trying to recruit college free agents, you know, because you can essentially, as the Arizona Coyotes, guarantee them spots. You know, I know there are more attractive teams in the NHL to go to if you're a college free agent looking to start your NHL career. But I wonder, you know, Arizona here can, you know, walk into anyone's, you know, in anyone's dorm and say, look, you don't have to compete with 3 or 4 other players for your position. We've got a spot open. Do you want to join us? That's another. And, you know, no one's going to be in front of you. These kids aren't going to be in front of you even for another 3 to 4 years. I think that's another layer to all of this one.
Maybe, but I guess it depends on what you believe in terms of the overall college undrafted free agent market. Just talking to some teams in the last few weeks, they think there's 3, maybe 4 players that could be mined out of the whole NCAA. And so if you're Arizona and you want to throw some dough at them, I mean, go ahead. The thing is, everyone's intrigued by the ability to jump into a roster spot. It's just that way more established and competitive franchises, a lot of times when you get to, in this case, you know, March and April, late April, are going to be able to offer the same thing by virtue of teams that are out of a playoff spot and say, hey, we'll give you the opportunity to finish out the season in the NHL, and then whatever happens out of camp next year is up to you. But there's plenty of other teams that can make a similar promise, probably even more so this year in the East, given that most of the standings are pretty much set. The teams that are in probably know they're going to be in, and the teams that are out can already get to looking at stuff like that.
Frank, before I wrap with you here, one thought outside of, I mean, Edmonton is Edmonton. We've talked about the Rangers and the Arizona Coyotes. Outside of some of the teams you've already discussed, who's the most interesting trade team for you right now in the NHL?
Whew. I think Calgary is going to be interesting to see what they're kicking around on. Brad Treliving's always in the mix. I do think there's going to be at least one of the 3 pending UFAs moved out of Anaheim. Vegas, what do they do? That's just in the Pacific. Vegas, what do they do with the cap space necessary to activate Jack Eichel? Dallas, you know Klingberg, and you've been all over that. I think Minnesota is in the process of going big game hunting, knowing that they've got an incredible cap situation that they're staring down in the next couple years. And Colorado, like Elliot has been saying it for a while, that they're going to be in just about every trade rumor. I mean, why not? They're a team that, as Nathan MacKinnon said after they lost last year, like, he's been in the league a while. They haven't really accomplished all that much. They haven't, they don't have anything to show for as good as a team that they've had. So, man, I mean, that's just the West to look at. Wouldn't be surprised if Winnipeg is kicking around on something. They have too good of a team to not get in. The West is way, way more interesting than the East this year.
So quick pause on Winnipeg, too, because, listen, another one last night, you know, they lose to the Nashville Predators. I know Nick Ehlers is out after the Orlov hit, but I wonder how close they are to looking the other direction on what they have with their roster and saying, okay, this isn't it for us. Like, last year was all about add, and they tried to get Jamie Oleksiak out of Dallas, et cetera. And I wonder if they go the opposite route, if they have a couple of more big losses here, Frank. I wonder if they end up being a seller come trade deadline.
I just don't see it with where they are in their competitive cycle. Like, they, at some point, they'll have to turn it over and cultivate new ground with new pieces. I just think that they've been building to this point for so long, and they've had such a good year from some players like Kyle Connor. You've got the goaltender in net. Their defense is finally what it, you know, needed to be beefed up to be. And if you want to punt on it and go the other direction, then you do it in the summer. You let Paul Stastny walk. You know, you let maybe an Andrew Kopp walk. You figure out what happens there. But I just – I don't see it at the moment. I think that team is one of those teams, they could get hot at the right time last few weeks of the year and see them go on a run and win the whole thing.
Well, for all the geniuses like myself that said they were the best team in Canada, I hope that you're right. Otherwise, I look like a dope, but I'm kind of used to that.
I picked them to win the cup, so I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, I guess. Yeah.
Always great stuff. Frank, thanks as always for stopping by, pal. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too, Jeff. See ya.
There is Frank Saravelli from Daily Faceoff, insider there and director of hockey content. All right, still to come, John Bartlett's going to stop by. We'll tee up the Avs and the Habs tomorrow on Hockey Night. But wanted to give you a little bit of a taste of the latest podcast from me and Elliot on 32 Thoughts. And this is a snippet, a few minutes, of our interview with Anaheim Ducks captain Ryan Getzlaf. Pretty candid stuff, too. Enjoy. Here's Getzlaf from the Ducks.
Do you miss Corey Perry?
Yes.
What's the biggest thing you miss?
Everything off the ice. Me and Pears are, best friends. We grew up in this game together. We were able to go through lots of highs and lows and all that kind of stuff. So, we did almost everything together off the ice, dinners out, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's the biggest thing I miss is just that camaraderie. Not that I don't have that with some other teammates.
Right.
Pears has been a really good friend of mine for a long time now.
So how hard did he work to try to get you to go to Montreal last year?
No, Pears never worked hard in his life. Are you kidding me? he would never work hard enough to do that because he wouldn't want to admit that he wanted me there. So I think we talked about it one time, but ultimately we've never been that involved in that kind of stuff. The hockey kind of part of it is a mood point for us when we have conversations, to tell you the truth.
A couple of things about your draft, because you mentioned that a couple of seconds ago. Where did you think you were going? Like, did you have an idea before Anaheim who was going to take you?
I had a pretty strong feeling that I was going to go to the Rangers. Mm. I think they were picking at 11 or something, and they had kind of told my agent, not told them, but kind of hinted towards the fact that if I was still there, they were going to take me. And so that was the only one that I kind of thought that I was going to end up at.
And they ended up taking Hugh Jessamine that year. That was 2003, and a Hall of Famers in that class, like in guys that have, shattered records and won Stanley Cups. I am curious, who do you think the last man standing will be from that draft? The last player, because... Whether it's, you're in the conversation. I think you're seventh. You and Corey Perry are, I think you have a similar amount of games played. But there's, Dustin Brown, and there's Ryan Suter and Patrice Bergeron. Who do you think the last man standing is? And do you think it might be you?
I know it won't be me. I know that. I don't know. There's no way my body will let me be the last man standing. But, I don't know. I mean, that was such a unique group. But, there's still quite a few guys going. So hopefully they can continue on.
Did you get the sense even then that, you look around at your draft class, like we look at it now and we say, this is one of the best drafts of all time. That first round, you guys are all in Nashville for the opening round. Did you all sort of look around and go, this group's going to do some damage in the NHL and do some damage for a long time? Like, did you guys know how good you were?
I don't think you ever look at it like that when you're that age. I think that, realistically, until you actually make the NHL and make a hockey team, you're kind of on the outside hoping to be in. So, but I think we knew that obviously we came up together. There was a lot of hype on that draft. Mm-hmm. Fortunate enough to play, a lot of international hockey together for the Canadian guys. And then the Americans obviously were playing against them. And then the Europeans came in too. So it was a really fun experience. I mean, the whole growing with that group from the under 17 tournaments on was really fun.
That was a fascinating time because that Grand Forks team, one of the greatest junior teams ever assembled, maybe the best junior team ever assembled. You guys win the gold and everybody goes back to their team. And then the first time Calgary and Red Deer play, you're fighting teammates. It's a throwdown. And then I remember, I think it was the first game, I remember being at Budweiser Gardens I think it was the first game after that. It was London and Kitchener. And right at the end of the game, Corey Perry and Mike Richards throw down, with 2 seconds left in the game. And here we are thinking to ourselves, wow, this is like one of the greatest junior teams we've ever seen. and they look like they hate each other like a week later.
Everybody hates each other.
Like, that was, can you describe that dynamic? Like, the Perry Richards thing was kind of interesting because I'm watching this fight and it's almost like they're laughing, like they're having a good time with it. But then I watched, you know, you guys, Red Deer in Calgary throwing down. Nobody was smiling, Ryan.
Honestly, I think that it's more just a contribution to the fact that we were just competitors. You know, that team was built that way. We were had one mission at that tournament, and that was to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. Not that we didn't get along there. Everybody was, you know, we were a tight group. We had a great time. But I think when you have competitors like that, we just don't really turn it off. We don't really know how to. So I think that next game was, you know, going into that after all the celebration, all the talk of the team and yada, 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 we got back to the team. And I just remember that, you know, Ladd and Fanouf, you know, they kind of had, they had their battles throughout the year the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
They just said that they wanted to fight. And then Fraze asked me, and I think that was kind of just both our messages to our team that, hey, we're back here now. We're not, you know, the Canada thing doesn't mean anything anymore. That's the way we looked at it anyway.
Ryan, will you be a coach or GM in this league?
I don't know. I can probably say for certain that I will not be a coach. Mm-hmm. Whether I go down the GM road at some point, I'm not sure. I'm intrigued by the management side of things and always like to kind of help understand what's going on. And I think it would be a cool experience to be part of building a team, whether it's a direct GM job or something in the background a little bit more. But we'll see.
One of the interesting stories around you in the last offseason revolves around free agent day. And it wasn't a certainty that you were going back to Anaheim. We had heard Nashville. We had heard Edmonton. No surprise to either. And I'm sure there were more as well. I asked someone in Anaheim, did you think he wasn't coming back? And this person said to me, I was concerned. Should this person have been concerned in the first place?
I don't really know how to answer that. I think concerns are raised when, obviously, when there was no contract come that day. That's a concern. I think that some of that had to do with me and Bob had a little bit of a miscommunication on, you know, what I was expecting as far as timing. And I think that, you know, when that happened, the day approached really fast without us really even giving it thought.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, that was kind of a miscommunication between me and Bob. He thought I'd meant one thing and I meant something else and yada, yada. But the timing of it was weighing a little bit, and free agent day comes and phone calls start coming. And obviously the level of concern is going to go up when you start listening to other things and and talking to other teams. So, you know, ultimately I don't know if it was ever that big of a concern. Anaheim was where I wanted to be. And then it was just a matter of working out the contract and understanding what was expected on both sides. So, you know, once the talks got going and everything like that, then everything was fine and we worked it out.
That's Ryan Getzlaff, captain of the Anaheim Ducks on 32 Thoughts, the podcast. That one available right now, just came out earlier today, available at your favorite podcatcher. The Ducks, by the way, facing off against the Tampa Bay Lightning this evening. You can watch that game on Sportsnet East Ontario and West. All right. Oh, quick note, by the way, we're talking about netminders tonight for the Vancouver Canucks. This is from Thomas Drance, a tweet. Spencer Martin confers with Ian Clark, that's her goalie coach, cedes the net to Michael DiPietro and leaves the ice. He's your expected starter, playing the fourth NHL game of his career and his first NHL game since the 2016-17 season for the Canucks Friday against Florida. It will be Spencer Martin in net for the Vancouver Canucks this evening as they face off against the powerhouse Cats. All right, when we come back, John Bartlett, a goaltender himself, hey, Aurora Tigers, will talk to us about a game that he's calling tomorrow alongside Greg Millen. That is the Montreal Canadiens and the Colorado Avalanche. On that page in moments, as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet radio network. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining me today and for joining me all week long as well. Conclude the show, conclude the week with one of my favorites. He is John Bartlett, play-by-play voice, Hockey Night in Canada, the NHL on Sportsnet, Montreal Canadiens, and the Colorado Avalanche. As the sounds of Meatloaf bring us in and bat out of hell. I was a big Meatloaf. I guess I still am. Guy, John, were you or was that a generation before you?
Probably more a fan of Noodles than Meatloaf. But
it's an inside joke there.
Yeah.
It's an inside joke there. Good.
A little bit. I mean, a little bit. Not a huge Meatloaf fan, but, you know, Bat Out of Hell, everyone knows the Bat Out of Hell album, right? So
absolutely. A classic. Yeah. And everybody knows how good the Avs are, and anyone that watched last night knows how close the Habs came to beating the Vegas Golden Knights. Now, tomorrow on Hockey Night, you and Greg Millen have the Habs and the Avalanche. I want to get on the Habs page here in a couple of seconds, but quick, there's the debate right now. Who's the best team in the NHL? Is it the Florida Panthers? Is it the Colorado Avalanche? From what you've seen lately, who wins that fight?
That's a good one. That's a good one. I would tip my cap to Colorado on a slight edge on that. I just think Colorado's rocking with a whole package right now, and they're on a heck of a roll. And, you know, as much as, and Jared Bednar, I think, has addressed this too with the team, as much as they're good at scoring, highest scoring team in the league, right, and just rolling, they've improved their defensive game. And that's probably going to be their biggest help in the playoffs. Colorado, to me, is one of those teams, when you look back to last season in the playoffs and the series against Vegas, you know, and they got off to the good start and then it just didn't finish for them. They look like a team that is starting to learn from the losses, learn from the mistakes, and just have that experience. And, you know, we've seen teams go through this before, recent champions, right? Tampa was one that had to lose before they knew how to win. Washington went a long way, you know, doing that. And Colorado has a little bit of that feel to me right now, where they're that team that has kind of learned how to win from their losses, and that can be scary when you have a team that's like that. So that's kind of how I see the Avalanche right now. They're a team on a bit of a mission to prove that they're more than just a regular season powerhouse, and that they'll know how to do it when the playoffs come. So be interesting to see how the second half of the season goes with Colorado.
And it'll be interesting as well, John, to see what happens come trade line time or in advance of trade deadline. You know, the one thing that I wonder about with Colorado here for trades, and listen, Elliot has mentioned this countless times, Colorado will be in on everybody. Always been, you know, they're in on Panarin, they were in on Hall, they were in on Eichel. Like, Colorado is always around it, trying to get the big players. You know what? You know who I wonder about lately? I wonder if Dallas falls out of it. I wonder how Joe Pavelski fits into this lineup.
Yeah, it would bring that little extra veteran presence that's sort of been there, right? That's an interesting look when you think about Pavelski added there, because when you go through sort of the roster of Colorado, they're talented, but they're still fairly young, which I guess is a compliment to, you know, the core when you think of it that way. And sometimes that's what you need. You need that one extra veteran that's been there and helps guide you through it. You know, I mean, everyone always talks about, you know, Burakovsky being a cup winner in Washington back in 2018. But yeah, you wonder if you just get that extra veteran, or sometimes it's that extra veteran who wants to have one more shot, or a first shot even, at winning a Stanley Cup. And you get that little extra motivation in the room, too. That would be an interesting one to keep an eye on for sure, yeah.
Pavelski's an interesting one. I want to ask you about Devon Taves. Joe Sakic has won a lot of trades. We'll just be blunt. Joe Sakic has stolen a lot of players. Like, I know, yep, you know, Brian, you know, Berkey always talks about how, you know, GMs aren't pirates anymore. There used to be pirates where guys really tried to get you on every deal. You know, you shake hands with one GM, you got to count your fingers afterwards. I think the closest thing we have to a pirate in the NHL right now is Joe Sakic, because some of the trades he's made, and the most recent one that raises eyebrows is Taves, and it's 2 second-round picks to the Islanders. You know, Lou had himself, and in some ways kind of still does, in a salary cap situation, and he was able to pry a first-pairing, like legit, high-end first-pairing defenseman away from a team in exchange for 2 second-round picks? I know we talk a lot about Cale Makar, and for good reason, but do you have a thought or two about Taves here through all of this, who's just an outstanding defenseman on a lot of other teams? He's the clear-cut number one guy that we're talking about all day long.
Oh, big time. And being paired with Makar, too, right? They're just a powerhouse together like that. But you know one thing about Devon Taves? It goes back to exactly what we were just saying. There's a guy who went through the same experiences of the Islanders, with the Islanders being really good teams and just couldn't get over that final hump in the playoffs. So there's, you know, he comes in a little battle-tested, I think, as well, from that sense of the same motivation that Colorado has gone through and some of their players to say, you know, we're good on the island. We know how to win in the playoffs and just couldn't get that little extra step that we needed to pass the conference finals. So, I think he's been a huge addition for Colorado, and you're right. I think Sakic made a great move there to get him. And now you have that great top pairing, but he comes in with that same experience and motivation from another franchise. So I think that's an intangible quality for Devon Taves that he comes there knowing, and especially when you weigh, if you think of the way that the Islanders play, especially in the playoffs,
yep.
And how they did, get their success to the conference final runs in the last couple of years. That's exactly what Jared Bednar's been talking about with Colorado. We can score, but we've got to do some things on our own end. We've got to make sure we're tight as a team defensively if we want to win in the playoffs. And that's the Islanders' style of hockey. So Taves really brings a couple of intangibles with him from his experience with the Islanders when it comes to playoff success that goes beyond what he's been doing on the ice that I think might be really critical for Colorado come playoff time when you've got to grind things out a little more in the way that the Islanders used to do it. So Taves is sort of, multifaceted in what he can bring to Colorado, and not just the talent on the ice, but that experience that he went through playing on the island and what Colorado, I think, knows as a group that they need to be successful in the playoffs.
Okay, level with me here, Bartz. Last night you're watching the Montreal Canadiens and the Vegas Golden Knights. Mike Hoffman scores in the third period to make it 3-2. I bet. Did you also think that Montreal was going to win that game?
They were hanging in. They were hanging in there. They had a buzz, and I thought, maybe this is one they could pull off. Just the only danger of that is when you're giving up 50-plus shots in back-to-back games, you're starting to, it's the old story, you start to lean on the goaltender too much, which was a little familiar story in Montreal with Carey Price all the time. And Montembeau was having a great night, but boy, oh boy, when you're letting a team like Vegas come at you, even though they're a little dinged up right now, it's a dangerous game to play. And I had the feeling when they tied and went to overtime, I'm like, oh, Vegas might have the momentum on their side here. Not a good thing. But, they put up the fight. I'm with you there. I thought, if they can hang on here and hold off that surge. But the tying goal was like, that might have been it right there. And, that's the one that hurt you kind of thing. So, they're trying to battle right now. They're getting some players back in the lineup with Hoffman and Anderson returning. And of course, all the, I don't want to say turmoil going through in the front office changes, but that certainly is now settled in the sense of who's in charge, who now is evaluating and making decisions. And I think in one sense, that might help things in Montreal with the Canadiens a little bit right now. It brings a little bit of stability in the sense of, okay, now we know who the boss is. We're going to learn what the boss likes, what they want, and you're going to start to get a better sense of evaluation of everyone. Where I think, you've been floating the last little while, not sure what was, who's going to come in and what their philosophy will be. So there does bring a little bit of stability, I think, when in the sense of the Canadiens from that way, now they know who's in charge.
Listen, you know that market really well, and it's never quiet. But right now, going through what Montreal is going through, safe to say, they need the volume knob turned down. Like, they need it a little quieter there. We know that there's more decisions on the horizon, discussions with veterans about what they want to do, discussions with players on expiring contracts and what's going to happen to them come trade deadline time. The conversations with people like Carey Price, what's his health status? What does he want to do, etc.? But you're right. This, John, this is the big story of the week in the NHL. The Montreal Canadiens, the most storied franchise in the history of the NHL, names their new general manager. It's Kent Hughes, as we all know by now, which isn't a quote-unquote traditional hire. I mean, we have seen agents, plenty of agents come in and work as general managers. What did you make of this one? You know, Danny Briere and Matthew Darche are our finalists for this one, and Jeff Gorton goes with Kent Hughes, Montreal-born, and we all know living in Massachusetts, his son's going to be a high draft pick this year in the NHL draft in Montreal, ironically enough. What did you make of this hire?
I liked it. And it really, if you go back to the hiring of Jeff Gorton and his press conference, he kind of tipped the cap a little there to Hughes probably being, one of the strongest candidates he had in mind at the time when he started talking about thinking outside of the box and going in a little bit of a different direction for a general manager and maybe going down the agency route. And it was like, okay, there it is right there. He's laying out the roadmap for a possibility for Kent Hughes. So, I think he brings some great, great skill sets with him. I think it's a bit of a different approach now to the game as a general manager. You know, Jeff Molson talked about, he thought the job, especially in Montreal, is more than a one person job. And now with Gorton and Hughes as a tandem, I think that they have the ability now to expand the scouting staff and do some things that they want to do and handle, as you said, the noise, because it's noisy. It can be very noisy at times. So I like it. And, you know, and a good West Island guy, Beaconsfield, he's not Point Claire, but he's Beaconsfield, but that's okay. That's a West Island joke for the Montrealers listening. But, it's great. I think it's a great hire. And they've got their work cut out for them to what they're going to do, but a great hire, and like I said, I think some stability now comes to the team with it as well.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I am curious what qualifies as a win for the Montreal Canadiens. Like, how would you, given everything that's happened, and we know, like, they're in the basement. Like, we understand the season is what it is, but. What do you think Montreal can salvage from this season? I mean, certainly the first overall draft pick would be a bonanza. That would be, wonderful. The draft's in Montreal. If the new regime goes up there to make that, first overall pick, that's a great bit of business for the Montreal Canadiens. But what do you think, what do you think at this point for Montreal qualifies as a win? What can they salvage from this season, John?
The youth. They've got to salvage the youth, okay? So they know what they have pretty much in the veterans that they've signed when you look at players like, Josh Anderson, Tyler Toffoli, and that kind of mix. But what they need to salvage, I think, out of this year is what's going to be your young foundation moving forward. Nick Suzuki, we know, is a great player, and I think they have a good sense of what they've got there. But I think they've got to be worried about the development of players like Cole Caulfield and moving forward. And then what you've got coming up through the system, but for the immediate time, worry about the youth that you have in your lineup. Are you hurting them or helping them with the way this season's going? And this season is a write-off, so you've got to be concerned. Alexander Romanov, another one, is he progressing in his game the way you want him to be? Is Caulfield progressing in his game? Ryan Poehling's had more of a look this year. Is he progressing in a way that you want to see? And you have to sort of look forward. Michael Pezzetta has been a great story for the Canadiens this year. That's wonderful. And for someone who would have gone to camp last year and then didn't, when they signed Michael Frolik, and now he's come back, he's made a great chance of it and taking, his opportunity here, and that's fantastic. So, but you've got to make sure that the youth that you have, that you want to build on moving forward, is not getting harmed this season. You want to make sure they're learning, developing, so when next year rolls around and you've done the things you want to do and you want to move forward now in whatever this retool, rebuild might be, that your youth has not taken a step or two backwards, that they're moving forward. And that's probably the one thing, if you're the Canadiens right now, that you would be most concerned about wanting to address, because those are the guys that you're going to lean on now moving forward, and you want to make sure that they're developing the way you want them and not getting harmed by the way this season is going.
Scale of 1 to 10, how concerned should Montreal be about the play recently? And listen, I know it's a challenging season, but still, how concerned should Montreal be about the play of Jeff Petrie of late?
Yeah, that's a bizarre one, isn't it? Everyone kind of talks about Petrie and the way he's he struggled in many facets of his game this year. I don't know if you can really even pinpoint what it is. I mean, obviously, when you look at the point production, right, the one goal in the last, I think it's 37 regular season games, and, you know, but it's just, yeah, there's a lot going wrong this year in his game and just trying to get back on. You can see he's trying to get back on it, too, and how much are you concerned about it? Yeah, I mean, you're hoping that this is just a bump in the road with everything else that's gone on, and that he can get things back. And, you know, the concern is there, but that, again, like I said, goes back to the sort of the overall picture. Are you worried about damage being done to your youth? Well, when your veteran is struggling like that a bit too, you've got to be worried. I think it's more so tied to everything that's just sort of gone on this year. I would like to think Jeff Petrie is having a bit of a one-off kind of season, and that's what they'd have to hope for, that he'll be able to come back and be more of a stable regular on the blue line, playing like they know he can. But part of that is, you know, the role he can play, right? When he's that puck-moving guy and he's the guy that can jump up in the offense, you've got to be able to trust your partner and trust the balance between a puck-moving and stay-at-home defenseman and what you have. So I think that's part of the greater picture that they have to look at there when, you know, if you end up being the only good puck-moving defenseman on a team, but you've got no one to move it to or no one to help you out on it, then it puts a lot of strain on your game, and mistakes happen because you can't make the play that you want to be able to make. So I think that's sort of all the balance going on with Petrie's season this year.
Never a dull moment in Montreal around the Montreal Canadiens. John, always great stuff. Look forward to you and Millsy on the call tomorrow.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun. Appreciate it. And also to everyone in Vancouver, I hope they have a great night tonight with the Hockey Talks night. I know it's a special night for the Canucks, so hopefully it goes well in Vancouver tonight too.
Amen to that. Should be a great one. Thanks as always, Bart. You be good.
You bet. Take care.
There he is. John Bartlett will be working the Montreal-Colorado game alongside Greg Millen. That is one of five games on Hockey Night tomorrow. It gets underway early, by the way. 3 o'clock Eastern tomorrow afternoon. Winnipeg Jets face 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock Eastern. Yeah, Jets and the Boston Bruins. Rob Faulds and Gary Galley with the call there. Good to see Faulds on the mic. Hockey Central with your host Ron McLean gets underway at 6:30 Eastern, and then three games at 7 o'clock Eastern. The Toronto Maple Leafs, rather, facing off against the New York Islanders. Chris Cuthbert and Craig Simpson have the call of that one. It is always interesting when John Tavares and the Toronto Maple Leafs face off against the Islanders, and they're in their new rink as well. Also at 7 Eastern, the Ottawa Senators facing off against the Washington Capitals. Rick Ball with the call of that one alongside Cassie Campbell-Pascal. Just talked to John Bartlett about the other game that starts at 7 o'clock, and that is the Montreal Canadiens and the Colorado Avalanche. And then your late game, your nightcap. Stay awake, all you sleepy people in the East. Harner Ryan Singh, Louis DeBrusque, and Scott Oak, the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. Who's in net for Edmonton is one of the big questions heading in to that one. Will it be Koskinen? Will it be a new goaltender? All eyes are on what Ken Holland is doing now. Oh boy. Flames and Oilers, the Battle of Alberta. Your nightcap game on Hockey Night in Canada tomorrow. I want to thank everyone who stopped by. You just heard from John Bartlett. A big thanks to Barts for popping by from the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff going over some trade talk around the NHL. Dan Murphy from Sportsnet. Big thanks to Murph. And yes, don't forget Hockey Talks tonight at Rogers Arena. It is the Vancouver Canucks and the Florida Panthers. And a big thanks, as always, to Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. Enjoy your weekend. We're back on Monday.